I realized that my story resonated. In fact, so many people would ask me, what was your strategy for the copy? And I was like, there was actually, for the first time, no strategy. I just wrote to me 5 years ago.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm your host, Jason Mark Campbell. Very excited to bring Sarah Turner with me today. Now, if you've ever surfed the internet, bought something off the internet, there's usually a set of artists behind the scenes that are doing what is called copywriting. We've talked a bit about this over the years on this show, but we're going to emphasize what is happening in the world of copywriting. Why is it so interesting for people to develop this as a skill set, which I think is very closely related to sales? Hint, hint. It's kind of sales with a pen and a pad, or rather a typewriter. And I'm so excited to go down Sarah's journey to become an eight-figure business owner and online business coach, has thousands of students on her platform, a community of over 500,000, and get this, some of her copy has generated over $37 million in sales in the services sector. She is the author of Bet on Yourself, a testosterone-free guide to being your own boss, just released this April, so we'll put a link to that as well. Might dig into this a little more to understand what does that mean. As a man myself, we'll see if there are some keys that we can apply in the way that we do sales, we build our businesses, and have success for ourselves. Sarah, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here.
Okay, I'm a man, and when I read the subtitle of the book, I want to lean into it. So I feel like if I look into the online marketing field, you're probably talking about an overstimulation, testosterone-fed type of industry. And I feel that might be the reason why your book is titled as such. I'd be curious to know what brought you into using that as what needs to change in the industry.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a copywriter first and foremost, and I've been doing that for 11 plus years now. And I teach people copywriting. I teach people sales and digital product creation. And it was quite a journey to get to a place where I was really comfortable with that. And so I talk to a lot of those people, and anyone who's looking at this industry, kind of the people that get the most attention tend to be the louder, I would say sometimes the more obnoxious, and, you know, the people who are quite frankly not my people. So my issues with copywriting, sales, marketing, all of it was that what I thought of when I thought of marketing was stuff that was just like not for me. And so as I dug into it, because really I was fueled by wanting to be a freelancer, wanting to be my own boss, wanting to be an entrepreneur. I loved writing. And as I dug into it, I was like, you know what? There's a way for this to work for me. And so I love to show that to other people, obviously. And, you know, picking that subtitle was really fun because, you know, testosterone, I knew it was going to like ruffle a few feathers. It means a lot of different things for a lot of different people, especially in today's world. But I actually thought that that was a good thing because, I don't know, some of my favorite books are the ones that I initially had a lot of resistance to. I didn't love the way it sounded, and that's where I gained the most insight. So kind of was hoping for a little bit of that. And then, of course, the people like who are resistant to sales, they read that and they're like, oh, yeah, that this might be for me. So, yeah.
I love that you did choose that title because obviously it does get some attention, which seems to be one of the biggest things we do need to fight for today. And I have to share my own personal journey, which is, you know, picking the whole title around selling with love. Like I had a battle about choosing that because you think sales and loves, people think it's weird. And then I was like, do I want to lean into that? I almost actually called my book Impact and Integrity, which would have been the most generic corporate sounding thing. Not terrible, but actually a copywriter friend of mine just said, like, you need to lean into something that's going to at least get attention, which is probably where I want to start this conversation, because you just mentioned how a lot of the people that are getting the clout, that are getting the follows, that are getting, you know, the transactions and attention are very loud and, do I dare say, often obnoxious. And it seems to be the winning formula for attention. So what have you been seeing being shaped on this online sphere? And is there a way to do it without being such an obnoxious person to get attention?
So not being obnoxious or just being more myself, rather, instead of focusing on kind of like what I'm not, I'll focus on a little bit more of what I am. Because I don't know, I've kind of come full circle, actually, and can look at those guys with a lot of humor and love, which is not where I started. But when I was thinking about how I kind of wanted to get this information into the hands of more people, it actually happened really organically. People were just asking me how I was traveling. I was traveling all the time. And I started telling them a little bit about copywriting. And I helped two people quit their jobs within 3 months. They both worked in the healthcare industry. They became copywriters. I kind of shared my philosophy about like sales and copywriting, how it doesn't have to be icky and stuff like that. You can write for people, brands and businesses that you're super passionate about. So it feels really good. And they were like, you have to make this a course. And then I just had so much resistance to that again. Anytime I've had these like walls of resistance, it's because I would look at like the online course industry. And I was just had the same reaction that I did initially to copywriting and sales, where I was like, do I want to add to this noise? Do I want to be one of these like obnoxious people? And then I know better now and like checked myself and just asked myself, like, could I do it in my own way, which is a softer, quieter way? I really leaned into my copywriting, you know, skill set and heavily relied on ads. So I didn't really have to do a lot of organic, which felt great because I didn't have to create content where I was constantly like putting myself out there. Yeah. And so as I did that and as I immersed myself in that world, I realized there are a lot of people who are doing it like that, but you don't see them because they're so much more quiet and they're not as in your face and ostentatious. And it's so unfortunate, right? Because it just keeps people kind of in the dark. I feel like everything has kind of been different iterations of that, right? Copywriting, building a course where I teach people copywriting, building a course where I teach people how to create digital products around their expertise, writing my book, even calling it Bet on Yourself. I struggled with that title too. I was like, ooh, so generic. But it's such a phrase in my community. Like, we're always talking about betting on ourselves and how it isn't really a bet. Again, kind of like taking what's already out there, what can seem cliche, but then if you take some time, you can really settle into the nuance, right? And those are the people I like to work with, the people who are more comfortable examining kind of the nuance of things, right? So, yeah.
I like that. And, you know, I've interacted with a lot of people that have those similar kinds of resistances around sales, around creating your own course, around putting yourself out there. I've met one, which I'll point to myself. I've had those resistance through every step of the way as well. But for some reason, you've pushed through and you've kind of continued forward, even though the resistance was there. And I'd be curious to know, even going back to just putting yourself out there as a copywriter and choosing that as a career, what were some of the things that you had mentally that made you say like, hey, no, this is going to be worth it. I should take that risk, as opposed to just going back and saying like, nope, obnoxious people, annoying, I'm not going to do it. I'll just go back to my comfort zone.
Yeah. So one thing I just have to say before we dig into that, though, is that I really love Selling with Love. Like, I love the title so much because I know it reaches my people. Like, my people are the ones who are resistant to this stuff. So I wanted to make sure to say that. But I mean, and this is also why I wrote my book, because the people who are the loudest, I've also had a hard time resonating with. You know, you'll read some of these people's books and they're like, always had a mission, always knew what they wanted to do. You know, they had like this drive for kind of something greater. And quite frankly, my story was about just eliminating things that weren't serving me, kind of like crawling out of some dark places, just trying to make my life a little bit better and something that I actually enjoyed. Like, so, you know, when I tell my story, I focus on like all the things I was just trying to get rid of. Like, I just didn't want a 9-to-5. I didn't want to sit under fluorescent lights. I didn't want to ask permission anymore, rather than like, oh, I'm going to go make $1 million this year. Like, that's never been my focus or my goal. It's like always looking at my life and like, how can I make it a little bit better? And that's very different, I think. And so that's another thing that I think my students really resonate with and is kind of what's guided my decisions. And so I really hope that people know that that's a possibility. Like, it doesn't have to be some big ambitious thing, you actually might just be trying to make your life suck a little less. Like maybe you just don't want to work for a shitty boss. That's a good enough reason to get started, quite frankly, in my opinion. A big, big part of my communities are women very commonly who just have a baby and they want to spend more time with their kids. And they're just like, holy crap. And a lot of them are like teachers, nurses. And they just are like, oh no, I have to go back to work now. Like, I don't want to go back to work. And I just want everyone to know that, like, you kind of don't. Like, there's so many opportunities and so many ways to make money. Like, you could sell feet pics. Like, you don't have to go to, like, I mean, there's just so many ridiculous ways in this world that, like, I just really kind of think the 9-to-5, unless you want to be like a lawyer or a doctor and that's your passion, is kind of dead and doesn't need to be your focus. So for me, it's been chipping away and making my life just a little bit better every day, which is not sexy. It's not the big, like, grandiose, like, I'm going for changing a billion lives. I don't know.
Oh my God, you just said the line I was about to refer to because, okay, I have so much love for Mindvalley. And I don't know if you're familiar with Mindvalley, but their online education platform, a lot of my listeners here, obviously you guys maybe have come from that platform since this was a Mindvalley published podcast before. And God, I look at their founder, Vishen Lakhiani, and I have so much admiration for that guy because he does think, I want to impact a billion people. And he's got that drive. And there's this thing that happens for a lot of us that are ex-Mindvalley employees where we kind of have this like, feeling of not being enough after leaving an organization that's driven by such a big goal. And then we start being like, hey, I want to live maybe an independent, you know, location lifestyle. I want to generate a few six-figure incomes, be comfortable, raise a family. And it's almost like you've been exposed to such a big intensity that then you're like, oh my God, am I not doing enough? And then any goal you've set after that exposure is almost always going to lead to some sort of mental disappointment that it's not enough. And then when I compare that to the general industry that's like saying you should be trying to impact a million lives, you should be doing something grandiose, you should be looking to make those millions of dollars, it almost seems like it's doing a reverse effect of causing more people to being like, oh, okay, that requires such a big level of commitment that I've actually not felt like I have enough to just beat the inertia. And as you've said, a lot of these people that have amazing skills that could be leaving the 9-to-5, that could be developing their skills as a copywriter, are not even exploring the possibility because you're blocked by this. And so it's so refreshing to hear this story. And I think that enables so many more people because even copywriting, like I need to be a 6-figure copywriter, 8-figure copywriter immediately when I start. And I'd be curious to know about the initial journey when somebody develops the skill. What does that usually look like for someone who might want to go down that path?
Yeah, a couple of things to say on that is that I have fallen into that so many times. You know, I'm like, I want to hit 10 million in my business. I want to hit, like, I get sucked into it. And I always have a moment that kind of brings me back to just really reexamining my why. Like, my why is to help as many people as possible. Probably not going to be a billion. I'm really okay with that. I actually prefer to go like deep rather than wide. And I did like a day in a life of a copywriter or whatever. And it was so funny. People were like, this is like pretty simple and boring. Cause it was just like, I cooked a meal. I got to cook a meal, did it during my like lunch break. I worked out. I went to pole dancing class. I went sailing. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies. So there's that. And now that I have two babies, I actually have a 9-week-old. It looks like I get to be home with them and like work when I want to work. And right now I'm coming up on the end of my maternity leave. And I was looking at my husband yesterday and I was like, I don't know that I want to fully go back to work when I've like planned to go back to work. And he was like, you don't have to. And so for me, it's like so much more about that. And it's so easy. And I see it happening in my communities on both sides, the people creating digital products and the copywriters where they get so hung up on these goals. And it's a big part of our conversation. In fact, I've even been guilty of kind of perpetuating it because I'll highlight students in the community who hit their first 10K month, who hit their first 20K month. And I realize that that actually creates this environment where people think like that's the ultimate goal and they get disconnected from their why. And so I've kind of circled back to highlighting people who are hitting their goals, which was like, You know, one woman wanted to open a nonprofit for saving animals. You know, one woman wanted to be able to care for her elderly mom. So many people wanted to take their kids on like road trips. There's a big RV, like boom. That was a lot of the people in my community. But the thing is that is more nuanced. And again, it's also like when you see copy on the internet, especially like ads, I feel like those stand out the most. Most people are focusing on how much money you can make. And I do it too, because it's easy. It's easy, it's fast, it like gets to the point. But it subconsciously communicates your brand or personal values through that messaging. And that's what you show people is important to you through whatever it is you're saying in your copy. And so it's a little trickier, I think, to like really focus on the values. But I actually think it makes for better copy because it just means more storytelling, more, you know, painting imagery. A piece of copy that has really resonated with people in my programs is I always talk about when I remember through my copywriting how I finally would like order a sandwich or something and I would be like, put the avocado on the sandwich, you know, add that extra like three. It was like a dollar back then. Now it's like $3 to add avocado to your sandwich now. And that was like a big deal, you know, for me to because I was so broke. I was like in debt. And so many people just like bring that story up over and over again because they're like, yeah, I just want to put avocado on my sandwich. And also, sorry, I'm kind of rambling, but it's like, it's just a testament to where I think a lot of people are. Like a lot of people in today's world really just want a good quality of life for their family. Like they're like, I don't really want to change a million lives. I'm tired. I just want to like get a good night's sleep and like not be stressed about my bills. And I think those people are kind of forgotten, honestly, in a lot of the like online education space and marketing and things like that. So I don't know. Those are my people.
Well, there's a lot of those people. I think a lot of the listeners here are going to be like, oh, refreshing. Jesus. And I think that's an element again of not only, you know, good copy, but also just good listening. And, you know, I've already picked up on the fact that it sounds like you are someone that has a lot of conversations with the people that are your clients or potential clients. And I wanted to just hear from you, how much importance do you put on really being able to listen to these people? And what are the ways you pay attention the most?
Oh, it's like, that's how you write good copy. That's also like how you're a good person. I don't know. That's the other thing I try to impress upon people. I'm like, actually, if you really think about copywriting, it's like being a good listener and being super empathetic, which is why I think women are especially amazing at writing copy, because it takes a lot of empathy and emotional intelligence. And so listening to people, I mean, it's essential. And that's why my communities are probably like the core part of my offers. You know, you have the course, but nobody's like, yeah, do another lesson. Like you have to, because you have to learn it. But the thing that feels good is the place where you connect with other people and you share your stories and they hear you. And then you realize, oh, I'm not alone. And that is, I mean, it's everything. We get together in person. I'm actually friends, like good friends with a lot of my students now. We do retreats, like, and so it's really become a big part of my life, and listening is everything.
And I'd want to know, like, so I guess in the community, is that where you spend a lot of time? Is it like you read a lot of what people are saying? Are you getting on phones with people? I wanted to get into a specific of like, do you have set rituals or methods you use to be on the pulse?
So in the community, it's like, you know, it's like a Facebook group. It's hosted on the platform Circle. So it's just like the conversations there. Yeah. So it's the conversations there. It's live Q&As. So I get a lot of questions and I'm always encouraging people not to just ask questions about like copywriting, but like mindset and how they're feeling and stuff like that. So they'll show up live. We'll kind of have some conversation that way. We also have coaching calls. I've also hosted mentorship programs that are much more in depth. And then we have annual events. I mean, they're my life.
There's all these different things that you get to be in touch with them. Just on a side note, I'd be curious to see what kind of resurgence have you seen for live events post-pandemic?
Oh my God, everybody's craving connection, craving it. It's actually been really beautiful to do live events because they have such a high impact. For I used to overplan my events. I wanted the people to walk away with it being packed with value and be like, I learned so much. But then I realized, you know, the best place to learn is online, I think. In person, like, we don't really need to workshop stuff because we can do that online. Like, what is different about being in person? Being in person is about connection. So I started, like, taking some of the pressure off of trying to, like, jam pack it with, like, learning and workshopping and stuff like that, and made it so much more about connecting around the struggles in your business, the things you're excited about, like kind of facilitating conversations that you just don't get to have in real life. Because the other thing is that a lot of these entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs don't have anyone in their life that really like gets it or supports them. And that is like a whole thing. So just even being able to connect and make friendships with people who are on the same journey as you, like, that is more impactful, I think, than sitting there and like workshopping like sales strategies or techniques, because you walk away with somebody who's in your corner. And that, I mean, we need motivation to continue. A lot of people do, you know, and it doesn't always come internally. I mean, you get to a place where I think that happens, but I think at the beginning, that's really hard. And you need a little bit of external motivation. And I think that the best place to find that is community.
Yeah. The physical events is just something that doesn't impact at a level that you just haven't been able to replicate online. Although we were all hoping for it, and there's a lot that can be done online, I think that physical space, we're not metaverse compatible yet. And so there's a lot that still happens there.
Glad about that.
Sarah, I want to bring you down back memory lane. So obviously now you've built an amazing business. You have a suite of products, events, community, courses. But I want to take you back in time, because oftentimes there's like that first sale that kind of changes your mindset of what is possible. And I would love for you to share with us, do you remember either your first sale you've made as a copywriter or one of the most significant early sales that had a profound impact on how you view what is possible?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like as a copywriter, because I was earning my clients' money, it was cool. And I loved it. At the time, it was like revolutionary. I was like, wow, I'm having an impact. My words like matter. And I can like tweak things to make it better or worse sometimes. But really, I think the thing that hit home for me with sales would probably be selling my own products, right? Because it was putting my own voice out there. One of the things I loved about copywriting, actually, and I say this to my students, is, you know, if you're nervous starting out, you actually get to like hide behind a computer and your words, like it's under somebody else's name. They have to give it the final stamp of approval. And I was writing mostly for doctors, so that was really scary at first, but I was like, you know, they have to approve it. It's kind of like getting that stamp. And it took me a while to feel comfortable and confident, quite frankly, because I really don't like to speak on things until I feel like I have something like profound to say, somewhat profound, you know, at least not obnoxious. Let's just start there. And so really it was like bringing in sales for my first launch of my course, because I realized that my story resonated. In fact, so many people would ask me, what was your strategy for the copy for your copywriting program, Write Your Way to Freedom? And I was like, there was actually, for the first time, no strategy. I just wrote to me 5 years ago. I was like, girl, look, let me give you a glimpse into your future if you just keep showing up, you know? And so the copy was really fun to write. It was really exciting, but it was also kind of nerve-wracking, right? Because it was more vulnerable than anything I'd ever done before. So for me, it was like the first launch of my program, and having it be like a success, like right out the gate, I was like, oh, cool.
Mm. Yeah, I find that there's a few key moments in sales, and one of them is definitely when you're selling and it's you, because then like the rejection can be perceived as much more personal. So if someone doesn't buy my course that I put all my love, my baby, they don't love me and my baby. And I think that's kind of a mental barrier that has to be overcome. I've personally never seen it fully go away. I feel like I just navigate through the resistance much easier, but it's not like at some point I'm like, I always have a little bit of personal, like, nervousness that comes in anything that I create personally. And I don't know, is it me that's weird, or have you noticed that as well?
This is a massive conversation in my programs. And again, as a copywriter writing for other people, I'm like, guys, like, this is somebody else's product, somebody else's thing. Like, your name's not on it even, you know. I actually really think that we're kind of conditioned in this way because, you know, when you meet people, right, the first, like, question usually is, like, what do you do? What do you do for work, right? Because that's what we've kind of been conditioned to believe is our identity. And so I think we're pushing back against that, actually. And I can't tell you the number of times I've had a conversation with somebody where they're like, yeah, but I'm so scared about selling myself when they talk about being a copywriter. I'm like, girl, you are not for sale. Like, you are not selling yourself. But I get where that comes from. I'm like unpacking that whole identity thing is part of it. And so I really encourage people to kind of just do what you can to remember that what you create is not who you are. But does it have a piece of you in it, especially if it's a program that's like about your experience and things like that? Yeah, absolutely. But it's still like not who you are. It's just a piece of who you are. And the more I've implemented thinking of myself in parts, because we're all very dynamic, I think, and very interesting, it's really helped, right? Like, copywriting is such a small piece of who I am as a person. And the more I can remember that and focus on it, the less I think that stuff stings. That's one of the reasons I think that the bropreneur who like makes their whole identity being an entrepreneur is actually like really painful for them. I've been in a lot of like mostly men's circles and like masterminds and stuff. And one of the questions that I often get is like, hey, so like, where do you find hobbies? Like, you have a lot of hobbies and all I do is work. Like, how do I expand my life? And I think that more often the people I work with, like a lot of women, for example, they have a ton of hobbies and interests and passions and they're multi-passionate and they don't realize that that's like an asset in this particular like mind struggle, right? Is to remember like you're so multifaceted and this is just like a teeny, teeny piece of you. So,
yeah.
You're touching on things I'm like very passionate about and I'm like, Sarah, wind it in.
Yeah. Well, no, it's really important because as you said, if your whole identity is based on whether you've had success or not, then it's like, wow, it's a yo-yo because things change, things go well, sometimes not so well. And having that kind of foundation in your identity, I think, is going to be one of the key things people do need to work in, which, you know, for me has been one of the things that makes me more confident putting myself out there. Just like you said, if I know it's not my entirety, it's taking a gamble on a part of myself that I want to put in front of the world. And so I wanted to dive into a bit of the technical aspect of copywriting. And one of the things that I would think is an elephant in the room, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, AI comes out. And then everybody feels like you can be a copywriter by just asking ChatGPT. What have you noticed in the industry when it comes to having access to tools like that and how it's shaped for people's, you know, understanding of going into a career of copywriting? What longevity is there?
Yeah. You know, when it first came out, I freaked out. I was like, oh, shit, my poor students. Same with the pandemic. I mean, there have been many situations where I was like, oh, no, my poor students. What are they going to do? And as time has gone on, and there was definitely an initial, like, everybody was super excited about it. I mean, but also, like, look at how often this has happened. Crypto, NFTs. I just feel like we love to get excited about things. And then reality settles in, right? And so when it first came out, I was worried. I was like, oh, no, what's going to happen here? But I did have a hunch that it would just be like any other piece of technology where we would learn to adapt, right? Canva came out and everybody thought graphic designers were going to be done and gone with. Didn't happen. And so there was like, I was in two minds, freaking out a little bit, worried about my people. Also knowing that we would probably just have to adapt and that would be okay. So as time has gone on, I've just learned that it's actually like a really fantastic tool. It has its limitations and lots of people are seeing the limitations of ChatGPT. It's pretty well known at this point. So people have kind of cooled off. And also, like, the client work situation has become less of an issue. People, I think, had a hard time with their clients. I do think part of it was perception, right? If you think that, oh no, ChatGPT is going to take my job, it's probably going to make your client acquisition a little less robust. But now I've just seen how copywriters are actually leveraging ChatGPT to make their work so much faster. Because quite frankly, ideation, research, outlining general initial ideas, it's fantastic for. And that's some of the most time-consuming parts of being a copywriter. The other thing is you really need to be, like, as we all know, like ChatGPT, you need to be a subject matter expert in order to get good results from it. And that is what I kind of teach. So I usually teach people to take kind of what they already know. Again, lots of people from healthcare, a lot of teachers, for example, they usually come in and then they become a copywriter for that industry, right? So maybe they're, I don't know, maybe they were a dentist and then they like write for like other dentists now. And that's just, it's so, especially that is so specialized that it's just, it's not even close to replacing copywriters.
When I think of some of the things I'm assuming are the essences in copy that can't be kind of replicated, there's this whole like my personal story and how that influences the copy. You spoke of the subject matter experts as well. And I'd be curious to know, like, are those, or is there anything else that you think is the core essence that can't be replaced for someone to write good copy?
I mean, storytelling, like really good storytelling. Like when you read what ChatGPT puts out, it's so ridiculous and kind of over the top. If that's what you're going for, it's probably great, but that's not what most people are going for. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like the human element, but also the other thing that I feel like, okay, at least how I teach copywriting, you walk out, you're a marketing strategist. You're basically a fractional, you know, marketing CMO. And so it's not just the words on paper. It's usually like entire funnel creation, how it all fits together, the strategy, stuff like that. But I just call it copywriting. So if you're just writing like copy, sure, those are probably the first people that will eventually be replaced by AI. But the people who are doing copywriting as I teach it, which is where you're doing entire, like, you know, funnel creation, all different kinds of strategy, things like that, then, you know, that's going to take a lot longer for that to be replaced. So
I remember when the birth of the internet was there, salespeople were going to disappear. And nonetheless, the nuance, which is a word that I heard you say many times, is that the good salespeople get to rise to the top and there's a lot less mediocrity in the industry. And I would assume copywriting is going through a similar.
100%. Cream rises to the top. It's getting rid of all the people who were on Upwork and Fiverr, cranking out blogs for like $5 a pop. You know, those people are gone, right? ChatGPT replaced those people. But again, at least how I teach it, like that's never who you're going for. Like my students have written for people like, not to like humble brag, but I'm bragging on them, like Google and Fenty and Audi and Alaska Airlines and Gaia Herbs. Like they're going for like big, big, big brands, but also most of them love the little guys, right? The little guys who are just a small business who has an amazing product that's like maybe helping new moms or a service. And those people, those like one-to-one service providers or those small businesses, they don't have time to like learn funnel creation, copywriting techniques and strategy. And they definitely don't have time to learn how to use ChatGPT to make all of that come together. You know what I mean? So those copywriters are still going in and helping them, even if they are leveraging AI to whatever extent it's like helpful.
I love it. Sarah, I love that we've actually walked in talking about copywriting, but really we talked a lot about the self and the breakthroughs we need to have and the nuance and building anything online and being a freelancer and understanding that possibility. And a bit of the things that I really picked up from our conversation is, for one, sometimes just going for that giant goal is actually going to be the limitation of getting you started for just the simple things you could achieve when you introduce a new skill set like copywriting, or you take the leap of faith of building your own business online. It sounds like when you started going into it and working with some doctors, and then the second leap of faith being, okay, if you go into copywriting, it's maybe an easier pill to swallow because you don't necessarily need to put your own personal brand out there. You're writing for others, so you can actually improve your craft, you can improve, and it's a little less personally vulnerable. But if you do decide to build a business around your own personal brand, there's another leap of faith to make there. But our stories is really the key that will allow us to stand out, and doing it in our own way is going to be the authenticity that I think our industry is craving. We didn't want to necessarily talk down, but we have pointed out towards the maybe the loud, the obnoxious, the cringy that exists online, yeah, they might be getting a lot of the big attention, but a lot of the success is happening in the corners where they're not so loud. And there's plenty of corners for people to have their own way of defining success that I think we often overlook, don't even consider. And I think that possibility is more real today than ever. You've talked about how there's so many different ways besides the 9 to 5 that we can make income. And today is absolutely that age to do that. When it comes to using AI, there's still great ways that it can enhance the way that you do your copy, that enhances the way that you do your sales. And if you're actually going towards quality and doing a great job, there's always going to be a way for you to rise to the top. And with that, Sarah, I wanted to know, when it comes to selling with love, since you're on this podcast, this is the question I love to ask everyone, which is, what does selling with love mean to you?
One quick thing is that something I'm really interested in is how our beliefs shape our reality, right? I think that realizing that you can sell with love is something that is so foreign to so many people, especially because we just even have so many tropes about like sales out there. And I see how online just people are craving like a softer way of life, a more like gentle way of life. And the tools that are out there to achieve that, there are so many. And so selling with love for me really actually is helping people figure out like how they can leverage sales to make their life just a little bit better. And whether that is, you know, promoting a program that they suspect that if they built, it might help some people. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel like a lot of those people are thinking, rather than like, I know this is going to work. So for me, I don't know. Selling with love is really like just figuring out the nuance and the individuality of whatever the thing is, for myself, for my students, for other people, and using that to kind of like spread the word. It's matchmaking, you know? Whatever it is that's created is not meant to be for everyone, and that is definitely a part of it too. So, yeah.
Well, if I want to pick a theme for this conversation, I love the fact that you've used the word nuance a few times, and I think that's something that's lost, especially in a space of loudspeakers where people just have to speak in absolutes, binary terms of yes, no, and the nuance is gone. And I think it's in bringing back that nuance that people can find ways to define their success, define their identity, find their craft, and do it in a way that is authentic to them, and not having to subscribe to it's done this way or it doesn't work. I think we're ready to put that into the past. And I'm so excited that you are one of the advocates to give permission for people to pay attention to the nuance, whether that's through their online business or through their copywriting art. And I also am glad that you've put out the book, Bet on Yourself, Your Testosterone-Free Guide to Being Your Own Boss, just released in April this year. Everyone, I'm going to put a link to the show notes so you can grab a copy of that. If anything you've heard today has resonated with you, tons of programs will have links to Sarah's website where you can download those, look into all the offers that she has there. But it's been a fantastic conversation. So Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you for being a champion of selling with love and to do everything that you do in a powerful way.
Thank you. And thank you for putting together these conversations. Like, truly, truly, they need to be had. And the audience that you're reaching, the skeptics and the people who are resistant, like, they're the ones I just think that are going to have the biggest impact, right? It's like the best leaders don't really want to be leaders, I think, you know? And I think that those are the people that listen to this podcast. They're the ones that you're reaching, and I think that's really important. So I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, Sarah, and thank you for what you're doing as well. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.